We all remember the words day zero and just how chat took it in a moment. And we all remember the words day zero and just how quickly water became something we couldn't take for granted. But what if the next water crisis doesn't just affect what's coming out of our taps and it affects what's on our plates too? The 2026 Food Indaba is putting the spotlight on the connection between water and food security. Joining us is Kurt Ackerman, the CEO and of the SA Urban Food and Farming Trust, to unpack why this conversation matters to every South African. With that, Kurt, Helen, welcome to CCFM.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It is also our pleasure, my singular pleasure to have you on, and I think it's a very important conversation to have. So how closely are water security and food security actually linked, and why should the average household care about that?
So water is life, food is life. It sounds trite, but you know, We can't have food without water. We are in our bodies. Is life, food is life. It sounds trite, but you know, We can't have food without water. We are in our bodies, mostly water. And yet when we talk about these things, we tend to separate them.
Yeah.
And you know, that's logical. Water comes from the tap and falls from the sky and food doesn't. And we talk about eating and drinking as separate things, but they're intimately connected. And one of the things that we know is that we've got more water scarcity coming to us. And so we wanted to focus on these connections between water and food so that we can take the lessons we learned from our last scare with the day zero drought and be a little more prepared, maybe a little wiser in our approach as we get ready for this. I mean, it's part of our reality. And the more we know, the better prepared we can be.
Yeah, and South Africa is a water scarce country. We've known that for a long, long time. And you mentioned Cape Town's Day Zero. It was a wake-up call for many of us. So looking back now, Kurt, are there still risks that concerns you?
Absolutely. I mean, anytime you have prolonged water scarcity, there's risk. We have a lot of people in Cape Town who live in very vulnerable circumstances, and really it doesn't take a lot to push them into crisis, and I think we always need to be conscious of that. When we are looking at this massive El Nino that's forming that will shift our weather patterns, it's part of a bigger trend where our weather events are getting in the Western Cape region are getting more extreme. On average, we have about the same amount of rainfall, but it falls more intensely. There are longer dry spells in between. And our systems, our farmers' knowledge, our stormwater systems, you know, they're just not designed. They haven't grown up with that way of being. So we are more vulnerable. And, you know, the lessons that we've learned from things. So we are more vulnerable. And you know, the lessons that we've learned from day zero are still with us, but there are some that we've only acquired in retrospect, and that's part of what we will be unpacking with the Food Indaba, is kind of what more can we know that hasn't made it through to general consciousness.
And every drop counts. And like you rightfully mentioned, we've had to learn lessons from that day zero scenario that almost happened. And that El Nino effect, as I've read the other day, we're in for a more intense and hotter summer coming this year. And just going back to some of the things we spoke about just a little bit in brief, listeners probably notice the cost of food seems to keep climbing. And so how much of that is connected to drought? We spoke about El Nino a little bit and changing weather patterns and also pressure on our water systems.
So the price of food can be surprisingly complicated.
Systems.
So, the price of food can be surprisingly complicated. So at a basic level, if there's not enough food available, then the price of food can go up. But South Africa on paper is a food secure nation, which is one of the just cruel ironies of it. And most of our agricultural growth is geared towards export. So, you know, we've got a lot of food, and our farmers aren't worried about feeding South Africans. So the risk is the farmers won't be able to employ as many people. They won't have as much income. Our exports will decrease. Those are the short-term risks that we're facing right now in our system, and from kind of drought and those sorts of factors. What's driving price increases in food can have more to do with, for example, the war in Ukraine and the availability of fertilizers. It can have to do with the price of petrol and some of those other factors. We have a lot of concerns about corporate consolidation in our food retailers. We have a lot of concerns about corporate consolidation in our food retail and brand ownership that, you know, has seen some results from the Competition Commission where there might be some inappropriate practices, and one's always got to look carefully at that and other factors. So the price of food, you know, does have these longer term trends that affect it, but kind of month to month, year to year, it tends to be a mix of these and other factors. So there's not just one thing that we can look at and say that'll reduce the price of food. Having said that, we do know that some of our big food corporates have massive profits, and they are under tremendous pressure from public advocacy campaigns to kind of come clean with, you know, what their business practices are.
Yeah. And you mentioned the food in Durban, Kurt. Who is it really aimed at, and who can get involved, and in what way?
So the easy way to answer that is it's aimed at anyone who eats. All of us. Yeah. So, I mean, food is, you know, the easy way to answer that is it's aimed at anyone who eats. All of us. Yeah. So, I mean, food is connected to all aspects of life, and we try to have Food in Durban events that speak to any level of interest, time availability, income, etc. So we've got kids events with the Cape Town Science Center and food jams for the teens, walking tours. The first week, which is next week, is more of a professional-facing week. So for people who would spend an all-day time in an all-day conference on the links between water and food systems, or join a virtual webinar with examples from the Global South and other communities already living in water scarcity. But then on the weekend, we've got a marketplace down at Maker's Landing that is free and open for people to come and see about 15 artisanal food producers buy their stuff. There's a literary event that's part of that. We've got some walking tours, like I said, and we will do some cooking and eating, not just talking about food, which is great. And people should go and look at the foodindaba.org website. All the events are there. They can book their tickets. It's quite affordable. We're a nonprofit, and we try and keep those low so that as many people as possible can participate.
I love how you answered my previous question, or the question I just asked you about who is this for, and you said anybody who eats, and that involves all of us, of course. And we'd love our listeners to join this conversation. And if someone listening is wondering, what difference can I possibly make? We're talking to the individual now, right? What's one practical step every household can take to help protect both our water resources and then also our food sources in the future, even in the present?
So the simplest thing we can do is to remember those lessons from the Day Zero drought. You know, water conservation is the most impactful step that we can take. And so that means just not running the tap unnecessarily. It doesn't necessarily mean you've got to have a bucket. And so that means just not running the tap unnecessarily. It doesn't necessarily mean you've got to have a bucket in the shower and flush your toilet with that water. That's when we're in times of increased scarcity. But being conscious of those sorts of things, if you can in your garden, maybe not as much lawn, maybe capture some rainwater. But this is going to vary depending on people's means and where and how they live. So it really is that consciousness of what you can do given your circumstances and doing it, and then raising awareness within your family, your household, your friends, your work colleagues, so that we stay conscious of it. The longer term, the bigger kind of systems change is to buy local and seasonal. So we're not importing grapes from Egypt right now. You know, South Africa, we don't have grapes in season now. Why are we importing this? Why are we spending our money on that? Can we make choices to, for example, eat more sorghum, which is drought-tolerant, hardy, and indigenous, as opposed to rice, which, of course, grows in flooded paddies and comes from farther away. So hardy and indigenous, as opposed to rice, which, of course, grows in flooded paddies and comes from farther away. So there are some choices we can make about food ingredients, but those tend to be a bit more difficult. So I would encourage people to experiment with those, see what they like, what works for them. And as I often say, it's progress, not perfection. You know, take a step. Take a step in the right direction, see how it goes. Maybe take another step when you can.
Kurt, just put us in the picture in terms of this food in Daarbarat. It's from the 20th of July to the 2nd of August. In terms of the numbers, in-person attendees, and just the global reach, and I think it's a global reach, how big is this Indaba really?
So the Indaba is not one of those events where you'll get 10,000 people at the convention.
Yeah.
That's not our approach, nor does it really work for, you know, food-related stuff.
Yeah.
So we have, I think there are 21 events over 14 days, usually small groups. So last year we had about 600 people attend about 20 events. So you do the math, about 30 people per event, but the conference had about 120 people. So if you go on a walk, 100 people attend about 20 events. So you do the math, about 30 people per event, but the conference had about 120 people. So if you go on a walking tour, you're going to have 8 to 12 people with you. If you go to the kids event at the Science Center, there's about 25 kids in the room. It's smaller groups, a lot of one-on-one interactions with facilitators, panelists, other people in the room. And it is spread across the city. So we're in Belleville, we're in Langa, we're at the waterfront, etc. So we expect to have, again, around 600 people or so. Last year, we also were able to reach through media about 120 million people.
Oh, wow.
And what that means is that there's a lot of interest in people wanting to learn more. You know, it's not that we're all going to become experts, but, you know, again, food is life. If we can be more knowledgeable about avoiding risk or helping, we want to. And so we very much try to use that sort of that platform, that reach, quite responsibly, and encourage people. We very much try to use that sort of that platform, that reach, quite responsibly, and encourage people, as I said, to just learn a bit more, take one more step, do what you can, and with time, we'll all be pulling in the same direction.
And so this conversation, in my opinion, has already been very valuable. Just in terms of the food in Daarba, Kurt, what's the efficacy? How effective has that been in raising the awareness? And now you've reached quite a few people. But in terms of just our own country as well, how effective is this type of in Daarba?
That is a very difficult question to answer with hard facts.
Yeah.
Because bringing people together in these contexts for dialogue is not setting the agenda. So we track a number of things. So our goal is to facilitate, to foster a food system that is healthier, more sustainable, and just. And so we look at those factors. One of the real factors is whose voice, who's in the room, whose voice is being listened to when it comes to certain things like whose voice. Who's in the room? Whose voice is being listened to when it comes to certain things like setting policy or reviewing the conduct of those who hold power?
Yeah.
And we've seen a greater diversification of voices from Fuleni, from Guguletu, from Bontuyeville, in spaces with policymakers, with corporates that have gone, started in the food and Daarba, and then it picked up outside because they've got now a relationship.
Yeah.
Someone who might be in a corporate in some glass and steel building actually knows someone who is in Belleville, and they can reach out to them. And so strengthening those networks so we don't, you know, we get out of our silos and our echo chambers has, I think, been one of the most effective aspects of the food in Daarba.
Yeah.
And then the fact that we have carried on since 2014, that there is enough interest, that we see a growth in audience, that we see a growth in reach year on year, that our sponsors and funders stay with us, that we're growing in terms of the number of partners. We have the Center of Excellence in Food Security nationally. We have the African Center for Cities, that we're growing in terms of the number of partners. We have the Center of Excellence in Food Security nationally. We have the African Center for Cities. We have some of the leading researchers and thinkers who are our partners in putting this together. And that to us is an endorsement that we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that, again, we're going to work with, for example, Food Agency Cape Town, an amazing group in Mfuleni that works from the community, in the community, of the community on food issues. And, you know, they're on board and we're taking our lead from them as well. Yeah, it tells us that we're on the right track. We can always learn more. We're not perfect.
Yeah.
But like I said, progress is not perfection. So we'll learn from our mistakes and carry on next year.
It's been amazing chatting to you, Kurt. And also, just again, details of the Food Indaba. Where can people go to find out more and buy tickets?
Foodindaba.org is the place to go.
Yeah.
And you can get tickets even for the free events. You just need to sign up for a ticket to make sure that there's space for you. And we'd love to see everyone at tickets even for the free events. You just need to sign up for a ticket to make sure that there's space for you. And we'd love to see everyone at least one of the events.
Yeah, and it's easy to find. I'm on that website, easy to navigate, and people can find out more info, of course, on foodindaba.org. Kurt, it was fantastic chatting to you. You've been amazing, and every success to you, not just for this event, but going through to the future as well. It's important to deal with food and water security. So thank you so much for making time to talk to us today.
My pleasure, and thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. So that was Kurt Ackerman. He is in charge of the Food Indaba. He's also the CEO of the SA Urban Food and Farming Trust.